from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The Red Baron.
Is he on?
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw.
Welcome back on this Saturday morning Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 The Score. David Haw, Bruce Levine, talking baseball for another hour right here on The Score. And it is a pleasure to welcome our next guest on the Circus Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circus Sports app today. Welcome, Rick Sutcliffe, and happy belated birthday.
David, Bruce, thank you. This is actually my first interview as a 68-year-old, so I'm a little nervous about it.
You sound spry, Sut. You sound very good. So let's go. We're talking about birthdays, but this is a big anniversary weekend because tomorrow, Ryne Sandberg, the unveiling of the statue. A lot of guys in town, a lot of celebration of the 1984 season. When you consider and reflect on that year, so I have such a big one in your life as well. What comes to mind first?
David, you're exactly right. 1984 changed my life. It changed everything in my life. I mean, I went from being with the Cleveland Indians and maybe getting two or three letters a week to a lot of times getting two or three boxes a day from fans for autographs and, you know, just all the attention and the excitement. I think my favorite story of all about as far as the Cub fans and what went on that year, I played for the Dodgers. I was the number one pick out of high school in 1974. I played in the big leagues from 76 to 81 with them. I saw a lot of great teams, a lot of great players come in, the Big Red Machine. I saw the Pirates with Stargell and all those guys. But when we went there, I think it was in late August of 1984, all of a sudden, like in the seventh or eighth inning, when Rhino would come up, the crowd started chanting MVP, MVP. When Jody Davis came to bat, they started singing Jody like Harry Carey does. I had never seen anything like that at Dodger Stadium. And all the great years in the history, the Cubs were able to do something that no team has ever done before or probably will again.
Sud, first of all, happy to see all the guys coming in for this event. I want to know more about the Ryne Sandberg that you would drive up and back to Glenview with, the guy that nobody seemed to know very well, the guy that wouldn't talk about himself, you know, just was a grinder, an everyday, you know, first guy out there, last guy to leave type guy. What did you get to know about the young Ryne Sandberg that none of us knew about?
You know, Bruce, we've talked many times on what a blessing Rhino has been to my life. You know, we've been teammates, we've been great friends for a long time, and we're even closer now because there's another team that that I know he's going to join me on real soon, and it's a cancer survivor. We talked a lot at the beginning of his treatments and things, and what I've been through, what he's going to go through, and you know, the bottom line is we're both, you know, we're both going to die with cancer, but we don't have to die from it. You know, it's probably not going to go away, but you're right. We became extremely close, and he was as shy or quiet, whatever you want to call it, as anybody I know. But, you know, I think about Rhino is a dad, and I think about, I've got Shelby and my grandkids here, and Shelby and Justin and Lindsay, they grew up together. We lived across the street from each other, and I think about, like, going over to pick up Shelby, you know, while Rhino was watching them, and they were outside, they had, Rhino built them a lemonade stand. And you wouldn't believe the traffic, that they didn't care about the lemonade. They wanted to be with Rhino. I remember one day picking Shelby up, and they were out there washing golf balls. Like, what are you doing? I mean, it was just something fun that, you know, that a dad would do. Bruce, you know this, and David, we've talked about it. Rhino, we go to the park and home every day. There'd be a lot of times, I mean, I'm going to say once a month, where, you know, we had to take a lot of different routes to get home because people would follow us from time to time. We'd find a baseball game going on, or we'd find kids practicing, and we'd look at each other, we'd start laughing, and we'd go, all right. We'd park the car, we'd get out, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, the dads would recognize us. And, you know, it was just having grandkids now and both of them playing Little League ball, I didn't realize, you know, we were Cubs. We're on TV every day. And I don't know if the kids really knew it, you know, what was going on, but the dads did. And, you know, just things like that. And Rhino a lot of times would go to the children's hospital with me for visits. You know, every night, Bruce, you remember this, we'd either 10 or 15 minutes, whatever it was, win or lose, no matter what happened, Rhino would, and I would sign autographs in the parking lot every day, no matter what. We were going to do it, and, you know, I might have lost the game. I might have pitched like the game yesterday, but he wasn't going to let me get away. You're not getting in the car and driving off. It's what we do. And I just think that a lot of the love and the, you know, the friendships that we have with the fans, I think it, you know, just came from, you know, being involved as much as we could in the community.
You know, Rick, I think one of the more remarkable things about Ryne Sandberg to me is that, I mean, there's so much to point to or pick out, but he was such the consummate pro and so quiet during his career, and almost it was his thing, it was his persona. And yet when he went into Cooperstown, he was immortalized in the Hall of Fame. His speech in 2005 was something that we still remember. We still remember the fire he spoke with. We still remember the message that he sent. Just wonder, when you think about how much of a contrast that does seem between the guy who was, he had to pull words out of his mouth after games, even after he had the Ryne Sandberg game, and then on the podium, the moment that people still remember, he did have that fire within that I'm pretty sure you were not surprised to hear because you were around him and knew him as you do.
I knew what, you're exactly right, David. I knew what was inside because I saw it once the game began. And I don't know if it was Bruce or somebody years ago asked me, in one word, how would you describe Sandberg? And after, you know, thinking about it, I mean, the word that came to mind was prepared. And I just think he was prepared every single day to have an opportunity to be his best. People talk all the time about the fear of failure. If you don't admit that you have the fear of failure, then you're trying to fool yourself or whatever. We all do. I have the fear of failure when I get ready to do an interview or I go on Marquee or ESPN or whatever it is. What makes the fear of failure go away? Being prepared. If you're prepared, you have nothing to fear. You know that you're ready to do the best you can do. And, you know, you guys remember this, but I remember when I got there in 84, I'd be at the bucket and I'd watch Sandberg and Boa take ground balls. And, I mean, it was like the game was going on. And I had, what's going on? And they had a bet every day on who would make an error or who wouldn't. This is in batting practice. This is infield from the coaches.
Yeah, you know, it's before batting practice. Yep.
Exactly. And then Bruce, then when batting practice starts, you know, Rhino always hit with Sarge. And in that group, you know, the days that I was pitching, I was out there hitting with them. They had the game. Get him over. Get him in. And I mean, it was intense. It was like man on second, nobody out. Get him over. Then you got him on third with less than two out. Get him in. I mean, they did that every single day. That's that preparation. And then fast forward 4 or 5 years later, I mean, there's Rhino taking ground balls with Sean Dunston. There's Rhino taking batting practice with Mark Grace. Get him over. Get him in. There are just so many times that Rhino picked me up and picked us up. I mean, he could beat you in so many ways. His bat, his glove, his arm, his legs, whatever. The Sandberg game. I mean, we're down 7-1 at that point. I mean, we weren't playing well at that time. We'd been swept 4 games by the Phillies. Things didn't look good. I think, me personally, I mean, the clincher in Pittsburgh in 1984, a 4-1 win, Rhino with a run and an RBI. Rhino didn't make an error. How about this, guys? You both remember what was supposed to be the first night game at Wrigley, 8-8-88. Yep. I mean, a huge crowd. The biggest event I've ever been involved in, ever. I mean, there's always going to be another opening day. You know, there was not going to ever be another opening night, or so we thought. But what happens in the first inning? I give up a home run to Phil Bradley. And I'll never forget, it was so quiet. I mean, it went being so loud to so quiet. I heard Bill Murray in the booth. I heard him say, "Turn him off." Turn him off. And Phil Bradley takes that deep. It's not going to work. Well, what happened? You know, the crowd's quiet. We're down 1-0. All of a sudden, when Morgana, the kissing bandit, came out on the field, they escorted her off. The very next pitch, I think it was, Rhino gave me a 2-1 lead. He hit a 2-run homer. That's all I needed. I think we were up 3 or 4-1 at that point when it started raining. But just so many times that, you know, he was right in the middle of all of the good things that happened for the 8.5 years that I was a Chicago Cub.
Rick Sutcliffe joining us on Inside the Clubhouse. More remembering Rhino and that special statue ceremony coming up on Sunday. Set, the thing I remember most about you and Rhino and Andre and a lot of those guys from the 84 team was the way that you guys ingratiated yourself and helped young guys that came up from the minor leagues right away. Now, the way that Rhino did it was a little different. He was always taking guys with him up and back from the hotel and to dinner. But there were a few pranks along the way. Talk about Ryne Sandberg, the prankster that the media never, ever got to see.
You know, nobody knew that. You're exactly right, because he always denied it, and he would always say that it was me that was doing all this. And it was so funny. I was in the Marquee studio yesterday, Bruce, with you and Cliff Floyd and Cole and Sarge was there. And Rhino used to love messing with Sarge. And to this day, I still think Sarge thinks it was always me, but it wasn't. We had these chairs that had a cloth seat in them, and there was a little wooden stake that went underneath a couple of. And Rhino, every now and then, would remove one of the wooden pegs in Sarge's seat. And here would come Sarge into the clubhouse, and he had his coffee and his cigarette, and, you know, he's always dressed to the nines. I mean, he was always perfect. And he'd come in, he'd set his cigarette down, he'd grab his coffee, and he'd go sit in that chair, and the seat would collapse, and he would fly over backwards. And, you know, we would all be around, and Sarge, he'd start yelling, and it was Rhino that was peeking around the corner. But when he saw Sarge fall, then he literally—I mean—he took off. You know, he was never to be seen. The funniest one, and even Sarge was like, "It's the most scared he's ever been." Rhino one day—I mean, this is how out of control Rhino was. He took rubbing alcohol and he circled the toilet that Sarge always went to when he would come into the clubhouse, and he took a line all the way out on the tile floor around the corner. And here comes Sarge. He's got his coffee, cigarette, and the paper. He's heading into the bathroom. And Rhino throws a match on the rubbing alcohol. And it takes off around the corner. And, of course, we couldn't see it, but it circled the toilet. And here comes Sarge running out screaming. And, I mean, just little things like that. And then how about this, Bruce? We talk about, you know, the shyness and how quiet and that he was. He won the Diabetes Man of the Year one time for Ron Santo, and he's going to get the award and everything. And Ronnie called him and said, "Hey, we'll fly back anybody you want." And Ronnie goes, "What do you mean?" And Ron goes, "Well, who?" Ronnie told me a story. He says, "Who's your best friend?" And he said, "Sut." And Ronnie goes, "Why don't you call Sut and invite him to the banquet?" And Ronnie goes, "Oh, I can't do that." And Ronnie's like, "What do you mean? He's your best friend." He goes, "No, I can't do that. If you want to do it, you can't." And I mean, that was Rhino. You know, he didn't want to put anybody out. He didn't want to bother anybody. And, of course, Ronnie called me, and I came back. And, you know, I think the reason he wanted me, I wasn't going to say nice things. I was going to roast him. And, you know, of course, that's what we did. And, you know, just the way he went about things, and just so happy for him and Margaret now, and him out there catching the first pitch yesterday. And just, you know, obviously the scoreboard wasn't what we hoped for, but just thinking about, yeah, I mean, I fly in with my family. I'm at the ballpark with my grandkids. I'm at Wrigley. I go to Murphy's. I go to Chicago Cut. And you know what? I wake up this morning, and I'm going to get to do it all again. So just I mean, Wrigley's just such a special place. And, you know, it's always going to be something that you remember.
Final moment with Rick Sutcliffe. So, Rick, I think that obviously people understand 2016 changed Cubs culture forever. You got the win the World Series, and everything's different after that. But going back to 84, we're celebrating 40 years ago, the statue tomorrow, all the memories come flooding back. What did 1984 do to Cubs culture in your mind?
Well, David, the story I think of is after we clinched in Pittsburgh, we played another game, we came back, and the following day we're in the clubhouse. And as we walk in, and, you know, I got traded, you know, in June. I didn't know a lot about the Cubs. There's all these people in there, and I recognized Ernie Banks. I recognized Fergie. I recognized Billy Williams. I found out later on that there was Glenn Beckert in there, and Kessinger, and Randy Hundley. And a guy comes up to me, and he grabbed me. And Rhino was right there. Our lockers were beside each other. And with tears in his eyes, he grabbed me, and he goes, "I'll never be able to fully thank you and repay you for what you've done." And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "Getting the Cub fans back to the playoffs." He goes, "We did everything we could to get them there." He goes, "But you guys got it done." And with tears in his eyes, Ron Santo looked at me and said, "We'll never be able to repay you." And as you mentioned, David, the 84 team, when all of a sudden Theo Epstein and David Ross and John Les, I got to go up and thank them exactly. I knew how to do it because Ron Santo showed me the way. Mm-hmm. I went up and thanked them for what they did, and wouldn't you know it, the next thing you know, Theo blesses me with one of the World Series rings. And it's just, you know, it's just a combination of all of the love and all of the prayers and all the work that you put in to try to accomplish that goal. And there's only going to be one team that gets it. And, you know, as difficult as things look right now, this 2024 team, there's a lot of really cool things there. Kyle Hendricks reinventing himself with the curveball at 34 years of age is the same thing Greg Maddux did. Greg Maddux was a two-pitch pitcher, and then people started getting on that, and he came up with a curveball and a good one, and that's what Kyle had. We got a lot of guys out there with a track record of winning, and Bruce Bochy is the one that told me, and he knows a lot about winning World Series. He says when there's a track record there, you don't worry. You're not concerned when it's all said and done. Dansby's going to hit 25 home runs. He's going to drive in 90 runs. He's going to hit 270. Well, you know what that means? I mean, that means he's going to get hot. I mean, he's going to get really hot. Ian Happ's on fire. Pete Crow Armstrong. Some of the trades that we made. These kids are coming along. And I know what the Cub fans are out there thinking right now. I mean, I've watched every game. If I don't watch it live, I tape it. You know, my hair has been constantly turning gray, but some of the games this year, my hair started turning loose with some of the things. How difficult those late leads have been to hold. But I got a good feeling. I feel like, I mean, I have nothing planned on my calendar in October. I plan on spending most of the month at Wrigley. That's my hope.
Sut, in closing, I want you to reflect for just a few minutes on the person of Ryan Sandberg. And by that, I mean, we all know the great baseball career we had and he had and what he means to Cub fans. But for me, what I take away from Ryan Sandberg is the way that he's put his life out there for people to see, fighting back from cancer. And I think back to 1994 when he stepped away from baseball to do what the most heroic thing that he could do with his life, and that is be there for his children when going yeah. through personal problems and stepping away from his career. Talk a little bit about Ryan Sandberg the man and what he means?
As much as baseball meant to him, his kids always meant more. Whether it was, you know, donuts with dad or whatever it was, Rhino was going to miss batting practice from time to time if it involved the kids. He you know, he wasn't going to take a day off. He was going to play. But it, as you say that, Bruce, you know me. I mean, there's so many stories I could tell, but the one that I can't, I got to get off my tongue. Yeah, he, you know, he came out of retirement. He came back in 1996, and a bunch of my friends in Kansas City, the Kansas City Chiefs players, Tim Grunhart, who went to Notre Dame, a bunch of those guys, a couple of my buddies from high school, they wanted to go to opening day at Wrigley and sit in the bleachers. And so we do. And that's when Rhino came out of retirement. And anyway, we head over to Murphy's afterwards, and all of a sudden somebody, Beth Murphy or Jim, whatever, hollered and say, "Hey, SportsCenter, ESPN, they're at Wrigley right now. Come on." We all run in, and there's Dan Patrick. And Dan Patrick goes, "Yeah, here we are opening day at Wrigley, and two former Cub greats returned to Wrigley." And we're all like, "What? Who's the other? Who's the second guy? There's Rhino, right?" So they show Rhino getting hitting like a double in the gap or whatever it was, and they show me in the bleachers with the biggest beer you've ever seen. I got bottoms up there, and you know, of course, Rhino went on to the Hall of Fame, and my story is I went on. You know, I've worked for ESPN for 27 years, so I think that day might have had something to do with it. I don't know. You know, it's a pleasure being with you guys. Congrats, the score inside the clubhouse. David, you and Bruce are terrific. Always a great listen, and it's an honor to be a part of it today.
Rick, thanks so much for joining us. Have a great weekend with the statue being unveiled tomorrow. Rick Sutcliffe.
Will do.
The Red Baron is also 68 years old yesterday. A belated happy birthday to Sut. Bruce, that was tremendous. We talk about Ryan Sandberg. We have talked to other people about Ryan Sandberg. I think we should hear from Ryan Sandberg himself. We had a pleasure and a privilege to interview him Friday morning on the Mullin Haw Show. We'll hear part of that next when we come back. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw.
Well, this has been a fun show. Looking back at 1984 with Rick Sutcliffe, looking ahead to tomorrow, the statue unveiling. David Haw, Bruce Levine, Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Bruce, Rhino was on with Mullin Haw yesterday. Did you catch most of that? Because it was a privilege and a pleasure to talk to number 23.
It was great. I'm looking forward to that sound that we play right now. Also, tomorrow at 4:00, the score will replay the tribute to Sandberg that our friend Mark Grody did a terrific job of that as well. I'll be on the pregame for Marquee with Elise Menaker as we are part of the ceremony for Ryan Sandberg and his statue tribute by the Chicago Cubs. But let's listen to, David, some of that interview with you and Mully and Ryan Sandberg yesterday.
Yeah, some of the highlights were talking about just what tomorrow represents. It'd be 40 years ago to the day of the Ryan Sandberg game where he hit two game-tying home runs late innings against Bruce Sutter. And so I asked Rhino what he remembers about that day.
Well, in that moment, it was a Saturday afternoon game. It's the Cardinals, always a big deal, full house. We're right there at the top of the division, half a game out, something like that, as I remembered. just a Dallas Green organization just made some trades to bring over Dennis Eckersley and Rick Sutcliffe, along with the other players in those deals. And, you know, I was just 24 years old, youngest on the team. And as I watch this and I check in with the veteran players, Larry Boa, Ron Say, you know, these are good. We have a good team. We have a good team now. You know, this is all prior to the game, but they said, this is all good. And then this game happens, coming from behind and actually taking over first place that day on national televised game, Saturday yeah. game of the week. You know, for me, it was another day at the office in some regards. You know, playing second base, doing my thing. Happened to have a very good game offensively, best of my career, which really settled in after the last active player on the bench, Davey Owen, goes up there and gets the hit that drives in the winning run, and we celebrate the W as a team. That's when the reflection, wow, that pretty good game right there. And, you know, I was like floating going into the dugout. And at that moment, I was interrupted by over at the Cardinals side, came over and they said, Mr. Sandberg, Jack Buck would like to do the post game show on the Cardinals network. I said, okay. I walked across the field. The crowd went nuts once again. Here I am with Jack Buck, you know, legendary announcer, as it turns out. I was somewhat naive and unaware of that. I do 5-7 minutes with him. Pop out of the dugout, jog across to our dugout. The crowd goes nuts again. I said, okay, a little tip of the cap, and, you know, this is something different. I get into the locker room, and I couldn't even see my locker with the media circled around it. And that was my first taste of a game like that and that type of a scenario. So that's when it sunk in that this was something different. Drove home the next day, knew that there was another game, and that was it. Another game tomorrow.
But his life would never be the same, Bruce. That was the beginning of the MVP campaign because America saw what happened at Wrigley Field.
Yeah, I was able to get to both clubhouses, and the first thing I did was go over to Whitey Herzog in his clubhouse, and he said, "Well, I've never seen a game like that. Why don't we just call the guy Baby Ruth?" Okay.
Yeah.
He said, "I've never seen anything like that. I've never seen Suter done like that because." Nobody had ever hit two home runs off of Bruce Sutter before. And how do you get two home runs off of a relief pitcher? If people are listening right now, you would say, how does the same guy hit two home runs off of one relief pitcher? Well, the answer is that back then, closers came in the seventh inning, mm-hmm. and they pitched the rest of the way. Okay, I'll repeat that. They came in with a jam in the seventh inning with a couple runners on base to get out of the jam. And then they pitched the eighth and the ninth inning. So in the Suter case, he gave up home runs in the ninth and the tenth to Sandberg. And the legend began.
That's what that team did. It was a special season. It was a special group of guys, the 1984 Cubs. And so I asked Rhino on the interview Friday morning on Mullin Haw, what made that 84 team special?
Dallas Green put the team together, and it really clicked. The last week of spring training, Dallas brought over Gary Matthews and Bob Dernier. Now we had a leadoff hitter, a number three hole hitter. Both Sarge came from the Phillies. They just won the World Series in 1980. Ron Say, the year before, World Series champion with the Dodgers. Larry Boa, shortstop, World Series champ with the Phillies. I was surrounded by players that experienced that and knew that, so it was somewhat of a veteran team, maybe with a 2 or 3 year window, and I was a young piece within that group. But what made it special was the character of those guys and the work ethic and their winning ways and their winning attitude. Just went a long way with the rest of us players. But for me personally, I learned so much about that and what it means to go down the stretch and be in the playoff hunt and then go to the playoffs. But, you know, I experienced the fans coming out across the country, meeting our buses at 2:30 in the morning at the hotels at coast to coast, in Houston to Montreal and all in between, because of WGN and because of the season we were having. and we're the game on at 1:20 in the afternoon, everybody watching. So, and then what completely changed after the All-Star break was you could no longer get a ticket at Wrigley Field. They were sold out. And then we see the people popping up across the street, standing up there on the rooftop, starting off with a handful and then a dozen and then a couple dozen. And then small little barbecues with smoke going up there and lawn chairs. I mean, we're laughing at that before the game would start to see the people across the street. And for me, that was the start of the bleachers that went across the street. So that whole scenario, all in one season as a 24-year-old, I learned so much and elevated my game and my expectations so much those were some of my goals and things was to have seasons like that and obviously go further and get to World Series the rest of my career.
And now here Ryan Sandberg is, Bruce, on the verge of seeing his statue unveiled on Sunday, but having dealt with a real personal battle since the diagnosis in December of prostate cancer, he's been very public about his fight. He sounded terrific on Friday morning. He sounds terrific when he talked to Mark Grody, and I think he'll sound, you know, really touched tomorrow. But this is what he had to say about just dealing with the cancer.
I've never felt down through this. It was in January, and you know what? I have a new appreciation. Anybody who's going through cancer and going through chemotherapy, mine's a very unusual type, very aggressive, and it will never go away completely. So it's getting it down to the bare minimum through chemo, and now I'm 3 weeks into radiation. But for day one, I never laid around. And I walked around outside, and I walked the dog, and I was with my wife walking down in our town we live in, and all these things. And then I had to miss the Cubs convention and spring training, but I had opening day on the calendar, circled that as a goal. And all in all, I think this just took me back to, and my strategy just took me back to my playing days of playing hurt and not playing the nine innings of baseball with the flu. Getting a couple hits and running the bases was pretty good medicine back in the day, and playing with bumps and bruises. I think I took my mentality and that's my makeup. That's kind of how my strategy with this was. And so with my family and the kids and the grandkids, I've always been upbeat and I've always sounded good. And what I say is I feel good, because comparatively speaking of December and early January, that did not feel good. So with medicine that was working, that was very positive. All I could say is blessed and lucky with the new technology and medicine. So I've sounded good, and what I would say feel good, you know, pretty much from the first week on.
And he looks great, Bruce. He sounded like he was pretty upbeat and positive, and certainly his state of mind is as important as anything that's happening with his body. And it was just a terrific 20 minutes with Ryan Sandberg on Friday morning.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to, with Elise and I tomorrow, being able to have the first interview with him after the ceremony. It's going to be hosted by our friend Cole and from Marquee as well, Cole Wright, as well as Bob Costas, and Mr. Ricketts is going to be involved, and certainly Crane Kenny. It's going to be a great day. I know you plan on being there, and it's just going to be a wonderful day to celebrate this, and also his, you know, the combined celebration of this 40 years and what he's meant to the Cub organization and Cub fans and his fight with cancer. There's some symmetry there that's, it's sad in some way, and it's heroic in another.
Bruce, Ryan Sandberg was my favorite Cub player ever, and so I was of the certain age where you grow up wanting to catch ground balls like he did and look as cool as he did at the plate and all those things. But I wonder, in your vantage point, covering him the way that you did, this has got to be something when you reflect back, some very fond memories for you. What do you remember most about covering Ryan Sandberg?
Well, I remember seeing his first hit as a Philadelphia Philly in 1981, and looking at the guy, and then not really, and paying attention to it. I think it was off Mike Krukow, the Philly of the Cubs, and then him being traded. That spring training that year was my first spring training. seeing his first All-Star game. I remember covering that. I remember the playoffs in 84, the playoffs in 89, being with my daughter there in 2005 when he went into the Hall of Fame. Just some great memories of Ryan Sandberg and getting to know him as a friend more than anything else after his career, because he didn't allow for that during his career, but getting to know him and getting to a point where he talked so much that I had to wait to get my words in.
Exactly.
Because when he'd go off on a subject, when it was just him and me one-on-one in spring training, he had an awful lot to say. And I just have so much respect for him and Margaret and their family. And, you know, Margaret Sandberg is very much a part of all of this as much as Rhino is.
Yep, Rhino's one of those guys. He's a Hall of Fame player and, as they say, even better person. So tomorrow will be a special day. Today we're going to have the Cubs right here on The Score. They continue their series game two against the Mets at Wrigley. Pre-game coverage at 12:45 with Zach Zaidman. And then Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer with the call. First pitch, 1:20. You can listen to every Cubs game in Chicagoland with the free Odyssey app. We'll come back, wrap things up, tell you about the Cubs lineup today against the Mets. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's 0-2 on Soler. And the pitch. Swing and a miss, strike three, and the Cubs win the ball game. A big, sharp slider. It ended up probably about 2 feet outside. Soler flailing at it, missed it by a wide margin. And what a job by Keegan Thompson, not only getting a save, but striking out all three batters he faced.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haugh.
Thanks, Pat Hughes. As thank you to 670 Score for that highlight of Keegan Thompson's save on Tuesday night. You can listen to all of Pat Hughes' calls on the Cubs games or Mullen Haw, Bernstein and Holmes, Parkinson, Spiegel, whatever you want on 670 Score on the free Odyssey app. Take us wherever you may go. Bruce, Keegan Thompson back, Luke Little down, and that may mean that Keegan Thompson, how does he fit into this crowded bullpen picture?
Well, he's either the closer today or you're the closer. We haven't decided yet on who it's going to be. I think it's everybody gets a chance to close day. I asked Craig Counsell yesterday in the pregame about the experience that everybody has gotten, because he's used three or four different guys to end games since Neris has had his problems over the last 10 days or so. So, honestly, I expect Neris to be back in the closer's role after this brief timeout. You know, it was not punishment for him, but certainly all the walks and the dramatic home runs were something that they needed to take away from him. They did give him
a break. Seven runs in three outings, consecutive outings. That calls for a break. Bruce, the lineups are in. Today we have Tyler McGill against Jameson Taillon on the mound for the Cubs. And then Nico Horner leads off, followed by Michael Bush, Cody Bellinger, Seiya Suzuki, Ian Happ, Christopher Morel, Dansby Swanson down to seventh, PCA batting eighth, and the debut for the Cubs against his former team. Tomas Nito will be catching Jameson Taillon today.
I'm waiting for PCA to either be put near the top of the lineup or go back to AAA. Because I don't... Now, look, Counsell is an expert at this. I'm not. He knows what's best for the young players to bring them along. I don't. But I don't want him on the bench, okay? I just think he needs to be playing baseball every day. And if he's not ready to lead off, and he certainly had his problems of hitting on a regular basis here, and he's not going to be trusted, I don't want his mentality changed, David. I don't want him to think he's a lesser player hitting seventh or eighth in the order. I don't want him to think about the fact that he's a defensive replacement. I want him to be playing every day somewhere. And again, I think he needs more time in the minor leagues, or you live with the bumps and bruises of him trying to lead off and create runs for you at the top of the order.
Subject for another day, another show, but I always am going to wonder exactly how aligned the view of Pete Crow Armstrong, how the views of from the front office and the manager. I want to know, does Craig Counsell think that PCA is capable of doing things as Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins thinks?
If you go to 670score.com and you look up my story from a couple days ago, I talked to Pete about all of this and some interesting answers and some interesting concepts from Counsell in the story as well.
And Bruce, we had an interesting show. Thank you for all of the hard work you do to setting this up. So we have some people to thank.
We do. Tyler, great job producing our show. Rick Sutcliffe, the Red Baron, joined us. Jonathan Cannon, the pitcher from the White Sox. David, always a pleasure doing this. I'm looking forward to that ceremony tomorrow with Marquee at 3 o'clock, me and Elise afterwards talking to Rhino. And on the score at 4 o'clock, Mark Grody with a great job that he did in producing and directing and being a part of the Ryan Sandberg tribute right on the score.
Speaking of Mark Grody, he is next. He will build a bridge to Cubs baseball 12:45. Zach Sabin with the pregame. Thank you, Bruce. Thank you to Tyler Farengel. Thank you for listening, everybody. Have a great Saturday. I'm David Haw. This has been Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's 0-2 on Solaire. And the pitch.
Swing and a miss. Strike three and the Cubs win the ballgame. A big, sharp slider. It ended up probably about 2 feet outside. Solaire flailing at it, missed it by a wide margin. And what a job by Keegan Thompson, not only getting a save, but striking out all three batters he faced.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw.
Thanks, Pat Hughes. As thank you to 670 Score for that highlight of Keegan Thompson's save on Tuesday night. You can listen to all of Pat Hughes's calls on the Cubs games or Mullane Haw, Bernstein and Holmes, Parkinson, Spiegel, whatever you want on 670 Score on the free Odyssey app. Take us wherever you may go. Bruce, Keegan Thompson back, Luke Little down, and that may mean that Keegan Thompson, how does he fit into this crowded bullpen picture?
Well, he's either the closer today or you're the closer. We haven't decided yet on who it's going to be. I think it's everybody gets a chance to close day. I asked Craig Counsell yesterday in the pregame about the experience that everybody has gotten because he's used three or four different guys to end games since Neris has had his problems over the last 10 days or so. So, honestly, I expect Neris to be back in the closer's role after this brief timeout. You know, it was not punishment for him, but certainly all the walks and the dramatic home runs were something that they had to step away from.
They need to give him a break. 7 runs in 3 outings, consecutive outings. That calls for a break. Bruce, the lineups are in. Today we have Tyler McGill against Jameson Taillon on the mound for the Cubs. And then Nico Hoerner leads off, followed by Michael Bush, Cody Bellinger, Seiya Suzuki, Ian Happ, Christopher Morel, Dansby Swanson down to 7th, PCA batting 8th, and the debut for the Cubs against his former team. Tomas Nito will be catching Jameson Taillon today.
I'm waiting for PCA to either be put near the top of the lineup or go back to AAA. Because I don't... Now, look, Council is an expert at this. I'm not. He knows what's best for the young players to bring them along. I don't. But I don't want him on the bench, okay? I just think he needs to be playing baseball every day. And if he's not ready to lead off, and he certainly had his problems of hitting on a regular basis here, and he's not going to be trusted, I don't want his mentality changed, David. I don't want him to think he's a lesser player hitting seventh or eighth in the order. I don't want him to think about the fact that he's a defensive replacement. I want him to be playing every day somewhere. And again, I think he needs more time in the minor leagues, or you live with the bumps and bruises of him trying to lead off and create runs for you at the top of the order.
Subject for another day, another show, but I always am going to wonder exactly how aligned the view of Pete Crow Armstrong, how the views of from the front office and the manager. I want to know, does Craig Counsell think that PCA is capable of doing things as Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins thinks?
If you go to 670score.com and you look up my story from a couple days ago, I talked to Pete about all of this and some interesting answers and some interesting concepts from Council in the story as well.
And Bruce, we had an interesting show. Thank you for all of the hard work you do to setting this up. So we have some people to thank.
We do. Tyler, great job producing our show. Rick Sutcliffe, the Red Baron, joined us. Jonathan Cannon, the pitcher from the White Sox. David, always a pleasure doing this. I'm looking forward to that ceremony tomorrow with Marquee at 3 o'clock, me and Elise afterwards talking to Rhino. And on the score at 4 o'clock, Mark Grody with a great job that he did in producing and directing and being a part of the Ryan Sandberg tribute right on the score.
Speaking of Mark Grody, he is next. He will build a bridge to Cubs baseball 1245. Zach Sabin with the pregame. Thank you, Bruce. Thank you to Tyler Farrengold. Thank you for listening, everybody. Have a great Saturday. I'm David Haw. This has been Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.